In the intervening years, considerable progress has been made, but International Women's Day provides us with the opportunity to highlight the inequalities which many women still face around the world. It is this global gender gap which must be addressed. While the Universal Declaration of Human Rights begins with the ringing affirmation that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights, gender inequality still persists in every society in the 21st century. It's no surprise, then, that equality for girls and women is a core focus of our work as the elders, and it's also a core principle of the Mary Robinson Foundation, climate justice. Equality, though, is a broad subject, so focusing on the problem through the common lens of agriculture and food security allows us to come up with effective solutions that can be implemented. It's very encouraging to see the increasing attention to the importance of enhancing the role of women in agriculture, and we've heard that very strongly here this morning. I participated at a meeting of EWA, Empowering Women in Agriculture in Africa, at the African Union Summit in Addis in January, chaired by President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. It was impressive to see the research and the broad collaboration that is emerging in Africa. 2014 marks the African Union's Year of Agriculture and Food Security, and women's role and empowerment is central to that. I'm pleased that at this event, new findings about the different roles of women and men in food and nutrition security and their policy and programmatic implications will be presented and discussed. At my foundation, we've worked on highlighting the themes of food and nutrition security and women's empowerment. For global development to be sustainable, the issues of climate change, gender equality, and food security must go hand in hand. This is the core of a climate justice approach, which links human rights, development, and climate change in a people-centered response to these interlinked challenges. At the household and the local community level, the reasons why people are poor, hungry, undernourished, or powerless are many and varied. You can't solve hunger merely by agricultural interventions alone. You also have to establish rights and support adaptation to the impacts of climate change. It's only at the national and international level that we design responses in boxes rather than for real people. Our boxes approach has had some results, but it has not transformed lives on the scale needed. A climate justice approach can, I believe, help to turn the tide. Let me share Janet Avako's story with you. Janet is a widow with five children who lives in Aliamu village in Uganda. She's always been poor, but when her husband died, she was left with nothing. She was chased off her husband's land and had no way to earn a living. She was destitute. Her children had no bedding, she had no latrine and no bathing shed. Her family were surviving on one meal a day and she couldn't afford to send her children to school. She lost all self-respect and even contemplated suicide. The turning point for her was when she heard a local development organisation, AFARD, say that all people, both men and women, widowed or not, have rights to the basics in life, food, water, housing. Up until this point, she had no idea that she, a widowed woman, had the same rights as a married woman or even a man. An understanding of her rights and the support she received from a rights-based organisation helped her to grow in confidence and to access the support she needed to become a successful farmer and to send all of her children to school. Janet keeps goats and sells them to buy the things she needs, like materials to build her house or a mattress to sleep on. Her first child will soon go to secondary school as a boarder, and her youngest child is attending nursery school. By diversifying her crops and intercropping maize and soya beans, Janet is managing the risks associated with climate change, unpredictable seasons, and more frequent droughts and flash floods. With the income earned from selling the soya beans, she's been able to rent additional land and hires extra labour to help her. Janet is proud again. She can provide for her family. She's a respected member of her community and she's attending adult literacy classes. At the end of the conversation, Janet wanted to have her photograph taken, dressed in the uniform that signals that she's attending adult education classes and holding a shovel and an axe men's tools that signal her ability to farm her land, build her own latrine, and care for her family. That's what a rights-based approach means. That's the difference it makes. That's what we have to understand. That's an empowered woman. That's what we need to integrate into all of our work on food and nutrition, on agriculture. Rights matter. The right to food is not an abstract commitment. It's the fact of life and something we are committed to providing for every man, woman and child on the planet. And we can no longer treat it as an aspiration. We need to link local communities and indigenous knowledge with policymakers at the national and international level. In April 2013, my foundation and the Irish government co-hosted the Hunger, Nutrition, Climate Justice Conference held in Dublin during its presidency of the European Union. And Eartharin and actually a number of people that I see present here were present at that conference. Thanks in no small part to the hard work of fellow organisers, the World Food Programme and the CIGIAR Research Programme on Climate Change, Agriculture and Food Security, the conference, I think, rather uniquely brought together grassroots community representatives with international policymakers for the real-world discussions on the links between hunger, undernutrition and climate change. At that conference, I was struck by the vital need for women to be at the heart of effective solutions to the crises they face. The conference showed what women can achieve when they're given the opportunity to contribute. Etrida Lukhanda, a smallholder farmer from Malawi, told her 300 fellow delegates, "We are the owners of this work." She made the argument that as the owners, their involvement in decision-making on climate change and development goals is critical. We can't keep half the population outside the door. At the conference, we also heard strong emphasis on women's rights and how in many cases an absence of rights to own land, to participate in decision-making or to access credit reduces women's capacity to withstand climate shocks and as a result to feed their families. Even though women farmers are responsible for between 60 and 80% of food production in developing countries, their rights and socioeconomic status are rarely equal to those of men. And this disempowerment undermines their ability to attain food and nutritional security. I know I'm repeating a little of what was said so well earlier, but it is very striking that 870 million people on the 7th of March 2014 are still suffering from hunger, wake up hungry every day, most of them being women and children. Undernutrition among mothers and children is the underlying cause of 2.5 million deaths every year. If we accept that malnutrition is rooted in political and cultural inequalities that lead to poverty and the disempowerment of women, we also accept that malnutrition is a rights issue and a good proxy indicator for development. Rural women are highly dependent on subsistence agriculture to feed their families. However, as we've heard, their access to natural resources such as land, water and wood is often limited. Discrimination resulting from laws or from social norms and customs and lower levels of access to education, among other factors, restrict women's access to credit, to agricultural inputs, to technologies and to services. As a member of the International Advisory Board of the IDLO, and I'm delighted that Irene Khan is with me here today and will be on the panel, I was delighted to take part in an IDLO workshop on the rule of law, climate change and sustainable development during COP19 in Warsaw last November. There was broad consensus that the absence of laws which protect the rights of women is a key barrier to achieving sustainable development, particularly in the face of climate change. The 2013 Environment and Gender Index of the International Union for Conservation of Nature sets out the discrimination women often face in accessing, owning and controlling land due to varying levels of legal protection as well as cultural non-acceptance of women's land rights. Widows, as we know, in many countries face barriers in inheriting land owned by their deceased husband. Gender stereotypes can also prevent many women from attaining the credit needed to buy new land. So often, women have access to less fertile land, and as a result, this makes them seem less productive than their male counterparts. The unpredictable reality of climate change compounds these problems. Women with fewer rights find it more difficult to adapt to changing weather patterns due to the forced circumstances in which they find themselves, such as the inability to own or inherit land, grow crops of their choosing, or have a say in how land is harvested. At the IDLO workshop, we discussed how the rule of law can contribute to a stronger response to climate change in a way that supports sustainable development. Climate change exacerbates the vulnerability of urban and rural communities already suffering from unequal protection of the law and a lack of access to justice. When women are empowered, not only do they become more productive, as studies have shown, but as the main source of food for their children, they give future generations a better start in life. I'm pleased to serve as a member of the lead group of the Scaling Up Nutrition movement. From the very beginning, we placed emphasis on the need to bring out the gender dimensions of food and nutrition and the importance of empowering women. Countries in the Sun movement are making significant headway in addressing nutrition, including through the rule of law. Kenya and Vietnam have recently passed robust legislation to protect and promote breastfeeding, and Madagascar has a network of women parliamentarians for nutrition. Nutrition justice will only be achieved when women are empowered and when policies and programs are gender responsive, and this is our collective responsibility. Next year, as we know, 2015 will be a decisive one. It's impossible to deliver sustainable development without addressing climate change. Ignoring the impacts of climate change and the global plans for the Sustainable Development Goals would lead to ineffective action. In order to generate more political will at the highest level in 2015 on both the Sustainable Development Goals and a new climate agreement, my foundation, together with the World Resources Institute, has promoted a declaration on climate justice, and it's available at our website, www.mrfcj.org, which outlines how this transformational action can be achieved. The two-page document points to priority pathways to climate justice, giving voice, finding a new way for economies to grow, investing in the future, harnessing commitment and accountability, and enforcing the rule of law. In terms of the latter, the Declaration envisions a climate-just world as one in which all citizens are treated equally under their nation's laws. Supported by 20 other leaders from the spheres of politics, academia, business, trade unions, and civil society, the Declaration is one initiative which defines how the rule of law can contribute to a fairer and more effective response to climate change, while working towards safeguarding the rights of every human being, male or female. It concludes with a line taken from Dr. Martin Luther King's famous speech at the March on Washington more than 50 years ago, "The fierce urgency of now." In dealing with the crisis of climate change, the global urgency has never been greater. The business-as-usual approach, where leading nations wait for their peers to cautiously take the first step, has to end. The fierce urgency of now compels us to act. While attending the Nutrition for Growth Summit in the United Kingdom last June, I was encouraged by the ringing words of President of Malawi, Joyce Banda, when she said, "African women want climate justice." Those on the front lines of climate change understand the problem they face and realize the need for fairness, urgency, and ambition in designing the effective international response. In recent times, there have been hints that the tide is finally turning and that the importance of the climate justice approach to global development and closing the gender gap is being realized by global decision makers. When UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon gave his opening speech to last year's General Assembly, he described how climate change, and I quote, "threatens all development gains," adding that the poorest and most vulnerable, who are the first to suffer and pay the highest price, are crying out for climate justice. With the UN designating the theme "Equality for Women is Progress for All" for this year's International Women's Day, I hope I've shown you the importance of climate justice in achieving this equality and sustaining it for future generations. It's vital that the UN Climate Summit in September, the interlinked issues of gender equality, agriculture, rule of law, sustainable development, and climate justice are addressed in order to achieve an effective framework for the future of our planet. 2014 is a year of action as we set our sights on the international agreements we need to reach in 2015. And I was going to and will talk about the need for maximum cooperation between agencies. But I was very pleased when I met our host this morning, José Graciona da Silva, that he spoke about his priority in looking for better cooperation, not just between the agencies here in Rome, but also, as he emphasised, with civil society and with the business sector. And that is the challenge that I really wanted to put to you, having the second occasion to do so from this podium, if you like, here in Rome on International Women's Day, or the eve of International Women's Day. I want to challenge each of the international agencies based here in Rome, and each of you in the roles you play within them, to use climate justice to inform the work you're doing to advance the 2015 processes. By actively linking human rights, development, climate change and gender equality in your work, you will empower yourselves and your organisations to break out of the boxes that constrain policymaking and implementation and engage in a new model of truly sustainable development. This could also help to build and create bridges between you in your different organisations so that the impact of your work is even greater. And with women at the centre of all this work, we will be steaming ahead with the full potential of the world's resources to achieve our common goals. Thank you very much.